From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. 20 years ago today, a suicide bomber drove a truck full of explosives into a makeshift Marine Corps barracks on the outskirts of Beirut, Lebanon. 241 American servicemen were killed and scores were wounded. It stands as the deadliest single-day attack on the Marine Corps since World War II. Soon after the bombing, President Reagan withdrew U.S. forces from war-torn Lebanon, and some say that pullback encouraged terrorists and offered them a deadly roadmap for future attacks. Today, hundreds of survivors and families of victims gathered in North Carolina to remember the dead and the lessons of Beirut. From Jacksonville, North Carolina, NPR's Eric Westerveld reports.
On paper, anyway, the U.S. Marines were in Beirut in 1983 as part of a multinational force to keep the peace in Muslim West Beirut in the wake of Israel's invasion and the subsequent withdrawal of Palestinian forces. In reality, the U.S. had become entangled in a bitter civil war as some two dozen heavily armed militias backed by Syria, Iran, Libya, Israel, and others battled for dominance. The Marines took almost daily sniper, artillery, and mortar fire from some militias who saw them not as neutral peacekeepers, but as combatants supporting Lebanon's shaky government. As most Marines slept on the Sunday morning of October 23rd, a bomber flashed a smile, one Marine said, as he raced his truck toward the barracks of the battalion landing team of the 24th Marine Amphibious Unit.
About 6:20 this morning, a truck filled with high explosives crashed through the southern gate.
There was devastation everywhere. There was bodies all over the place, stepping over people everywhere.
I know there are no words that can express our sorrow and grief over the loss of those splendid young men and the injury to so many others.
Two decades later, survivors, veterans, and families of those killed gathered at a USO building near Camp Lejeune. Many are seeing each other for the first time in years.
Oh, hey, Joe. Hey, real good. Things in Poway.
we're hanging on. I finally retired.
You finally did.
Joe Siokin, retired Navy Command Master Chief, clearly remembers the chaos and horror of that day and the little details. Siokin recalls how a friend had just awoken, poured water in his helmet, and started to shave in a makeshift bathroom when all hell broke loose.
Ceilings came down on us, walls peeled apart. I was literally blown across the room.
And that was in the building next to the blast zone. Only a few weeks before the attack, Siokin had switched rooms and buildings with Marine Sergeant Major Frederick Douglas, the top enlisted man with the Marine Battalion landing team.
Now here's a guilt trip for you. He gave up his room to me to go live with his troops, and of course he died over there. But he said, you're the senior Navy guy. I want you to have this room. I'm going to go.
Siokin's words drift off as he chokes up. 20 years ago, Virginia Beach Deputy Sheriff Cal Openshaw was a 33-year-old Marine Staff Sergeant. He was sleeping in a tent nearby when the blast and clouds of thick, pulverized concrete dust swept over him.
I still smell it today, and I still seize up when I do. I've tried to remind people that before 9-1-1, there was October 23rd. And you need to remember that, too.
The barracks attack came 6 months after a car bomber struck the U.S. Embassy in Beirut, killing 63 people, including 17 Americans. In the years since, the Marines' Beirut mission has become something of a textbook study of mission creep, flawed rules of engagement, and inadequate force protection. As peacekeepers, most Marines were not allowed to keep their guns loaded. Retired Gunnery Sergeant Richard Ray is a Beirut veteran.
We were the wrong men in the wrong place for the wrong job. That's not what the Marine Corps does.
When the USS New Jersey off the coast of Lebanon began shelling militia in the Shufa Mountains in defense of the unpopular Christian-led Lebanese government, photojournalist Bill Foley says it became clear that the Marines were no longer seen by many militias as non-combatants. Foley covered Beirut for the Associated Press and recalls how many journalists viewed the Marine base as incredibly vulnerable.
The fact that the base was guarded by guys with no bullets in their guns, and the fact that the place was basically wide open, occurred to a number of us, this is a little strange. I mean, up until the bomb, I could drive my Brazilian-made yellow Volkswagen and park it under the commander's office.
Upstate New York residents Mary Ellen and John Jakowski lost their 20-year-old son, James, in the attack. Like the rest of the Marines in Beirut, James was scheduled to be relieved and return home by Thanksgiving. His mother says his last letter home was particularly hard to take.
He said, "I have a funny feeling in the pit of my stomach, and I love you very much."
The Joukowskis reflect the feeling of many families here in worrying that official Washington and many Americans may have forgotten those killed in Beirut and the political and policy lessons of the bombing. Right after the attack, Ronald Reagan's White House talked tough about punishing the perpetrators. Then White House Deputy Press Secretary Larry speaks.
"We will not yield to international terrorism because we know that if we do, the civilized world will suffer and our values will be fair game for those who seek to destroy all we stand for."
But critics say on Beirut the Reagan administration did yield to terrorism. There was no retaliation. A few months later, President Reagan pulled the Marines out of Beirut, a move some believe sent a signal of American weakness and emboldened Islamic extremists. Veteran Richard Ray.
"When you don't retaliate, it does send the wrong message. It lets people around the world know that you're a sucker and you can take it again, and they'll do it again."
Despite evidence at the time that Iranian-backed Hezbollah guerrillas carried out the attack, a planned U.S. strike against suspected Hezbollah training camps was never implemented. Retired Colonel Tim Garrity commanded Marine ground forces in Beirut. The colonel believes the political decisions to cut and run in Lebanon and then in Somalia 10 years later opened the door to more attacks against American interests, including 9/11.
"And I have to say the question begs, by virtue of the fact our tepid response that we did have, if that didn't just whet the appetites for the subsequent acts of terrorism we've seen the last 20 years.
In a 1998 interview with ABC News, Osama bin Laden cited Beirut in calling U.S. armed forces paper tigers. The Marines fled after two explosions, bin Laden boasted. Several al-Qaeda training manuals found in Afghanistan after the fall of the Taliban were filled with references to the tactical and political lessons of the Beirut bombing. Today, under a crisp fall sky at the Beirut Memorial bearing the names of the dead, people prayed and embraced old combat friends.
"Wow, Staff Sergeant Angel Diaz. Hey. Oh, God."
Angel Diaz hadn't seen retired Staff Sergeant Joe Covella in more than 10 years. Covella teared up as he ran his hand across the name of Edward Gargano etched in the granite wall. Diaz comforted Covella with an arm around his shoulder.
"You should take recognition that you led these men. Most more of them would have been dead had it not been for your leadership."
Eric Westervelt, NPR News, Jacksonville, North Carolina.
"Picture to show you. Don't go away.
Okay.
Is that Sergeant McGee?
Yeah.
Lumpkins. Bess. Hawkins. Myself. Perry. Remember Tenenbaum?
Yeah, I saw Tenenbaum the other day, man."